You're listening to local programming produced in KUNV Studios.
The content of this program does not reflect the views or opinions of 91.5 Jazz and More, the University of Nevada, Las Vegas, or the Board of Regents of the Nevada System of Higher Education.
Hi, I'm Charles Stanton. I'm on the faculty of the Honors College of UNLV and the Boyd School of Law.
Hi, I'm Gabriella Tam. I'm a fourth-year accounting student.
And welcome to
Social Justice.
Social Justice, a conversation.
A conversation.
Well, good evening, everybody, and welcome to a unique and special broadcast of Social Justice, a Conversation.
Yay.
I'm here with my partner, Gabriella Tam.
Hello.
And we're going to talk a little bit today about the whole Harvey Weinstein situation, because I think it really deserves some scrutiny.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, a number of years ago, he was convicted of sexual misdeeds of many varieties, and he was sentenced to prison. And one of the things that was the impetus for the investigation that was done and him being brought to justice at that time was the She Said movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the She Said, you know, a series of articles which won the Pulitzer Prize for Megan Tuohy and Jody Kantor from the New York Times seemed to be a landmark event.
Yeah.
In the fight against sexual mistreatment of women. And then, of course, the excellent film that Maria Schrader made with, of course, Carrie Mulligan. And they had a whole bunch of people in it. Andre Brower, who recently passed away, unfortunately.
Yeah.
About you know, what that whole dynamic was in as far as the New York Times newspaper trying to get evidence from literally scores and scores of women who were harmed. After that movie was released, and of course, the articles were written. He was put on trial and was in prison actually for a number of years. Then what happened was he was also charged out in the state of California,
mm-hmm.
for a number of similar crimes, and he was sentenced to 16 years in prison there. Anyway, he appealed the decision.
That's crazy.
And somehow, I laugh, but it's the laugh of. It's a hollow laugh. It's the laugh of someone who knows how the system of justice really works in this country. Not what you read in a book,
mm-hmm.
but actually the practical ways that people who are malevolent can avoid punishment because they have a sympathetic ear among the judiciary. Anyway, by a 4-3 vote, the verdict was reversed. A new trial was ordered. And there were a couple of things that really stood out to me. One of the interesting things that stood out to me in this case was the deciders were three women. Three women voted to revoke this guy's conviction, which I really have a hard time wrapping my head around, considering all the harm that this man did, and their reasoning vis-a-vis the fact that when the trial was put together, there were literally scores of people who would have been able to testify,
yeah.
as to what this man did. The judge who was hearing the case only took four of those people to testify as to basically the modus operandi of how this man worked and how he was able to position himself in such a way
mm-hmm.
that he could harm these women. Okay, So in this decision that the judges concocted, it was found to be overly prejudicial to the defendant that these women were even allowed to testify in that case. And because of that prejudicial effect, they said, the case had to be thrown out because he didn't get a fair trial.
This is so funny to me because it's like, oh, he did so much bad stuff, but we can't judge him like based on that. Like, yeah. What?
Well, what's interesting about it to me is that it's very reminiscent of the Bill Cosby case.
Oh.
Because in the Bill Cosby case, with all these different witnesses,
mm-hmm.
I believe in that case that the judge took five women who testified in that case, and they testified as to that part of the experience that they had that was similar to what the woman who was the victim in this case was.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, the whole system of inviting the person into the house or visiting with the person, sharing a drink with them, which was laced with some form of sedative, and then after that was done, then sexually abusing the woman, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And that case was thrown out also on the grounds it was too prejudicial. What was interesting about that case, though, which made it, I don't know if you can say worse than this case. I mean, they're both horrific.
Yeah.
Was the fact that he could not be retried after he was convicted. And the reason he could not be retried after he was convicted was supposedly because the prosecutor, the district attorney at that time, had supposedly made him a promise that he wouldn't try him again or open up the case again. But there was no proof in writing or any document that actually showed that.
Yeah.
Nor was anybody who was in the succeeded him as district attorney, nobody knew anything about it. But the high court in Pennsylvania, just like the high court in this case, they voided out his conviction, basically. And what they're going to try to do, I don't think they're going to be successful in California, because California has a more liberal law mm-hmm. concerning what people can testify to bolster the case of a person who's been abused. But it's hard to get my head around how this kind of comes down. I think a lot of it's political. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it's political. I don't think these cases are decided wholly on the facts, the merits, or any of that stuff.
There's something way deeper that we don't know.
People of influence yeah. do not get the same justice as a regular person.
Yeah, that's true, actually. I was going to say maybe, like, because the three women who voted, like, that his case be overturned, like, it didn't happen to them, so it's hard for them to empathize with the victims. And of course, like, I don't wish that would happen to them, but like, I hope that they find it in their heart to like be like, oh, maybe I shouldn't have done that, like, oh, that could set up some really bad stuff to happen in the future for other women.
Yeah, well, that's I think the ramification of it.
Yeah.
And I thought in, reading the decision myself, I thought a few things. Number one, it's going to make it a lot harder for individual women to get a conviction against people who harm them.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be a lack of supporting evidence.
Not only that, like, I've seen it in all the movies that you've, like, chosen for the classes I've taken with you. Like, these women are, like, they're, like, torn apart inside the court. Like, they're, everything about their story is questioned. Everything about who they are is questioned. Yeah. Like, oh, what were you wearing? Oh, you were wearing that. That's why you got, like, sexually assaulted.
Yeah. So that's one part of it.
Yeah.
Then the second part of it is, even in a state like California, which has a more liberal view of witnesses, a lot of women who might be able to back up the person whose actual crime is being prosecuted, they're going to say to themselves, well, this is all going to be made public. So why am I putting myself out there?
Yeah.
If down the road
they could just overturn it.
They can just throw it out, and now I've gone through the mill as a witness in a trial, and there's no point to it because it's like a wasted opportunity to get justice.
Mm-hmm. It's just another reason for people to lose hope in our justice system.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And then, of course, the third thing is, it's basically in a sense an encouragement for people to do these things.
Yeah, I mean, actually,
if you see, like this man who's done so many egregious things, when you see the movie. And the movie is very, very hard to watch.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a woman, but even as a man, as a human being,
it's unsettling.
It's unsettling,
especially because it's like it's real. Like, what is it called? Like voice recordings.
Yeah.
They have like actual evidence in the movie.
Yeah. And of course, the other thing, of course, too, is that it's a disincentive.
Mm-hmm.
For any woman to even bring the charges in the first place.
Yeah.
But as I think it was Jodi Kantor wrote an article about it this week.
Ooh.
And she said that the damage that this guy did to these people was obviously the criminal damage. But he ruined or stopped or
yeah, their whole careers.
Their whole careers. And after they went to work in that place, they couldn't get another job in the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how those very important human things escape the judiciary that decides these cases. You know, I'll give you an analogy which I think is interesting. Although it's a completely different, it's a different kind of case.
Uh-huh.
When I was listening to the arguments in the case of whether the ex-president had immunity, it struck me that it was not connected to any reality. In other words, they were asking these lawyers questions. There were all kind of hypothetical situations about, the president ordering a junta and all this other crazy stuff. But the actual question to be decided was what happened on January 6th. In other words, does the person who is the president of the United States have an immunity from prosecution in a case where he encourages, fosters, speaks up about, what have you, the nullification of the vote by the Congress, including threatening the man who was his vice president and not seemingly interested that a mob might kill that man simply because he wouldn't go along with my wishes. And these are the very basic things. One of the things that struck me also, which I thought was very damning toward the court. I mean, There's been a whole bunch of people since that argument. Lawrence Tribe, who is probably the most learned constitutional expert in our country. I mean, there's a few people, but he's certainly one of them.
Mm-hmm.
He basically said the argument was a joke.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a system of justice and you have the highest court in the land and you have a man who's a scholar and has that great experience in constitutional law, and he's basically saying that the high court conducted an argument which is a joke, that's really bad. That's like saying that the system of justice doesn't exist. And then the other thing that was crazy about it was when the lawyer, I guess his name was Drebin, he was representing the government.
Yeah.
And he starts talking about what actually happened that day. And we all know what happened that day because we saw it. Justice Alito goes, I don't want to discuss the facts of the case. Well, the facts of the case are what judges do.
Wait.
That's what you discuss. That's what. In other words, you're trying to define. You're trying to take a set of facts.
Yeah.
And what you're trying to do is to say, on these set of facts, is the behavior of the President of the United States protected? In other words, does he have the immunity to do these things? And I would say to most people who are, you know, sane and fair-minded is, of course he doesn't.
Yeah.
Because he's trying to overthrow the government.
Like, okay, I wish we could, like, talk to him. But, like, if it was any other president, right? If it was, let's just say, if it was the current president who did these same things, oh, they would try to get him out, like, super quick. They'd be like, nah, we're gonna get rid of him. We're gonna implement a new president. Like, it's only because it is who the ex-president is, is why they're taking so freaking long debating on this dumb question.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the other thing too, which was interesting, like, is in a rational political system that's non-biased.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be to the benefit of the favor of the electorate, basically the people of the country, to have these issues decided before they vote? Wouldn't you think that you would want to know if the person that is running for the presidency again was not a person who was involved in trying to overthrow the government?
Literally.
You would think, but it was the same thing. It was the same thing with the issue regarding, taking him off the ballot in those different states.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They decided that case in like three or four days. This thing, they took like 5, 6, 7 weeks just to hear the argument. That argument could have been heard. I mean, if I was a judge, it would only take me a couple of days to decide it.
Yeah.
The precedents of the court were the two major precedents. The precedent with United States versus Nixon, where he had to turn over to the authorities all the tapes and all the documents related to the tapes, and United States versus Clinton, where he had to appear before a grand jury in Washington, D.C. and give testimony. I mean, but this is 10 times worse than what Nixon or Clinton did.
Yeah.
This is actually trying to overthrow the government. No, it's okay. He tried to overthrow it, but that's okay. The other thing that's crazy about it too, though, you know, and they're always talking, you know, all these people that are on the court are always talking about, we got to look at the intent of the framers. We got to look at what the intent of the Constitution. Well, the intent of the framers and the intent of the Constitution was very, very clear. The purpose of America, the purpose of democracy, the purpose of a constitution was to have removed the yoke, removed at King George as the king
literally,
of England.
That is what I say. Like, we are literally where America is now is because we were trying to get away from the monarchy.
Exactly. Exactly.
And I'm like, oh my gosh. But like, Trump, the ex-president, literally wants to become a dictator. He wants America to become all these countries that we say we hate. Yeah. You know, he wants us to become like China, like North Korea, like Russia. He wants us to become like all of these people. Yeah.
But what's crazy about it, too, though, is he tells you.
He literally tells you, yes.
It was like that day. It was like that day. If you analyze what he said in the speech that he gave and by the White House before these people went to the Capitol, what did he say? Did he say, I want you to have a peaceful protest? He didn't say that. He said that if you want to have a democracy, you have to fight for the democracy. So he was encouraging them. He was encouraging them to then on top of that, according to Cassidy Hutchinson, when she testified before the committee, a lot of these people had weapons that were there. And he told, I guess, security, whoever it was, to turn off the magnetometers that could detect the weapon. And he was asked, you know, it was asked why he needed to turn it off. Now, because obviously there's one obvious reason that, you know, the president is speaking. So you got Secret Service and everything. So they would obviously, if you went through a magnetometer and detected a weapon, they would take it off you because obviously it would be a threat to, you know, kill the president. But what does he say, though? What does he say? He says, turn off the magnetometers, he says. I don't have anything to worry about. They're not gonna do anything to me. Okay. So if they have those weapons and they're not gonna do anything to you, what are they gonna use them for?
Who are they gonna attack?
So that's part of it. And then the other crazy thing is, like, you know, in thinking about it and trying to relate to the case that we've been talking about at the beginning of the broadcast. The judiciary in this case, and the judiciary in the situation with the ex-president, and the, how can I put this, the Congress, who initially wanted to support removing the president and impeaching him and everything like that.
Yeah.
Where is the moral conscience of all these people, though? Bill Barr is a perfect example of this. I couldn't believe the interview he gave with Caitlin Collins. And he was the woman was talking, you know, and she said, you said all these things about Trump. Okay. You said all these things about Trump. And you're saying now that you're going to support him. How is that? And he said, well, the biggest threat to America is progressivism and liberalism.
How?
Well, I consider myself a progressive, but also a moderate. I am not a threat to this country. You are not a threat to this country, okay? We're not going out there and saying that we're going to change the country into an autocracy instead of a democracy. But all these people that are Republican, I don't know what's happened to them. It's like a cult, though.
Yeah.
It's really like a cult where they know something is wrong. You know something is wrong, but they don't want to do anything about it. It's the same thing with, if you want to call it, you know, and it's funny, like, you know, somebody was saying to me, like, you know, that we have a feminist culture now in America.
What's the problem with that?
But what I said was, feminism in what way? I mean, feminism in as defined as people being protected, from people who would go harm them. Is that what you're saying, that we shouldn't have any protection?
That reminds me, like, there's this question going around, like social media and stuff. And women are being asked, if you were placed in a forest, would you rather be stuck there with a bear or with a man? And there's so many women who are saying, oh, obviously a bear. You know why? Because bears are predictable. The worst thing that could happen to you is that you get killed, which is very dramatic. But, like, compared to a man, like, you don't know what their intentions are with you. There are so many things that could happen. A bear could be, you know, somewhat of a quick death, hopefully. But like with a man, there's so many things beforehand, before you could possibly die to them, that could happen, that are way worse, way scarier, you know? So yeah, like.
Yeah, that's interesting. Well, let me say this on behalf of the men. You know, when you watch the Women Talking movie,
mm-hmm.
and you know, August is one of the characters in the movie, the man who's like the scribe. He writes down everything that they say.
I loved August in that movie.
And he was a good and decent man. And there are a lot of good and decent men out there.
There's two men. There's the ones who understand why women are picking the bear, and there's the ones who are like, "What the heck? Why would you choose a bear? The bear, like da 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 da." They don't understand it.
Yeah, but my thing is though that there's certain basic things that a society has to have.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about rules and law and order and all the rest of those things. And, you know, we can interpret them differently. A woman might look at a certain situation different than a man would look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But the basic thing in any society is the safety of its inhabitants. If you cannot guarantee that people of a certain gender
race
are going to be safe,
because
the justice system, the response from law enforcement, the attitude of the courts toward these cases, however you want to put it, then there's a question of the validity of what's going on in the country. I mean, you know, it's so interesting because. And I've been saying this for a long time, you know, and it's discouraging to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they had the case where the FBI settled with the victims, the Larry Nassar victims.
Oh.
And they paid like, I don't know, $137 million. You know,
they just threw money in and they were like, sorry.
The gymnastics.
Yeah.
You know, the girls. The girls and young women who were on the gymnastics team, you know, the girls and women who were on the in the gymnastics academies, the women who went to Michigan State. But I keep saying though that in these cases, the answer is not the money. The answer is, in the case of the people who worked for law enforcement or whatever they were supposed to be doing, you have a duty as a law enforcement officer, as a person who's responsible for obeying the law. If somebody comes to your office or gets in touch with you, either the person themselves or them in the family or what have you, repeatedly in a number of these district offices over a quite a long period of time, and you don't do anything about it, to me that's criminal. To me, that's criminal. It's not, you know, it's the money at this point, bag the money. We don't need to worry about the money. We need to worry about a system where people are held responsible,
mm-hmm.
where you can't be indifferent or not be bothered. All what happened in this case, and all the young women and girls and children that this man abused, that was directly related to the indifference of the law enforcement authorities. They didn't do their job. And their job is to protect the citizenry.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a matter of whether it's a woman, it's a man, it's a transgender person, whatever it is. That's what you're supposed to be doing. And, you know, the settlements that they make, okay, so the government pays them money or something like that. But the person's life... The person's life and their future and the way they look at things and the way they look at relationships and how they look at other people is unalterably changed because you didn't do your job. And that's the problem that we have in our country largely.
It's such a simple thing. Just do your job correctly.
Yeah.
And, you know, you could save a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, people... I always say that our national illness is indifference.
Mm-hmm.
That people, a lot of people just don't care. They don't want to be bothered. they're not interested. Now, in certain things in life, we see that all the time. But there is a higher standard for people who are working in law enforcement. There is a higher standard for people who are in the judiciary.
Yeah, you got to go through all these, trials and trainings and all that?
Trials and training, but also just that you possess the moral equilibrium,
mm-hmm.
that you're going to act when something happens, that you can't just, you can't just blow it off. I can't imagine, and I don't think you can either, that if actually you had an office and you were in that field of endeavor and people came in to talk to you about some of these things, and you wouldn't follow up on it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something deeply wrong there. And I think that's a societal problem, though.
100%, yeah.
That we don't want to face these things. That's what it is, basically.
Yeah.
It's going to go away. It's not going to go away. No problem ever goes away. You know, it's like the guy in the newsroom, that clip we showed in the class a couple of semesters ago, where he says, the first step to solving a problem is acknowledging that there is one.
Yeah.
If you're going to blow everything off and all of that, you're going to...
Change won't happen if you don't acknowledge it.
Change won't happen. Well, on that somewhat pessimistic but hopefully hopeful note for the future, we've had the pleasure of throughout this semester being able to reach out to all of you. We appreciate greatly your listenership, and look forward to seeing you all and having you as listeners in the fall. And more than that, all I can say is good night.
Thanks for listening. Good night. Thank you for listening to our show. If you have any questions, please do not hesitate to contact us at TAMG1, that is TAMG1, at UNLV.nevada.edu, or to contact Professor Charles Stanton at charles.stanton@unlv.edu.
See you next time.